Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving. And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, David Von Strawn. And now, here's David.
Hello, Charlottesville! It is Sunday. It is June 13th. And you really need to look at a calendar when I start this show. And this is home... Jesus Christ, I am off. Usually people are like a day or two off. No, David, you're half a week off. I'm just trying to push through 2018. I'm just trying to get to 2020. That's all I'm really trying to do. Just trying to push the clock. And this is Homegrown, your show about local art here in the new... I think it's trying to change Charlottesville. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strawn, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Nico Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Just a little guy with ugly feet trying to get through the darkness. Actually, my feet ain't that bad. I just need a little work. But
a little man, Manny Petty.
My man Clinton HNIC, executive producer of Homegrown here up on the boards. I love him like a brother. Hello, Clinton.
What up, David?
All right. So let's go, without further ado, let's talk about what's going on in the hood. So shout out to Charlottesville Police Department for more police brutality and injustice for people of color and marginalized people. This weekend, Corey Long was convicted. He was sentenced to 10 days. And don't give me just 10 days. And don't give me it's not that bad, because, you know, everybody knows what it means for a black man to be in the system and to have a record and to have jail time on that record. That means people look at you different at job interviews. People look at you different at on college applications. People look at you different in a lot of way. Corey Long is 23 years old. When he wasn't at A12, he was helping elderly people at his job. That's what he did for his job. He helped old people in Charlottesville. He helped his community, and then he came to defend his community. Then he was penalized for it. And then when people came to his support, they were arrested for supporting him and for protesting that arrest. So tell me this. How come there have been more A12 protesters that have been arrested in Charlottesville than Nazis? How come there have been more protesters against white supremacy that have been arrested in Charlottesville rather than white supremacists? Can any of you white liberals on 94.7 answer me that question? We have a serious legal justice problem, not only in Charlottesville, in America. Well, when black folks do something, it's completely different and it's sentenced completely different than that of white folks. And as much as I appreciate and love and value the people that came out to support Corey Long, most of them white folks, they got out the very next day. They were arrested. They were picked up. They got their paperwork and then they were out. But let that be some black folks. Let that be 100 or 1,000 black folks marching through the downtown mall. This place would look like the Civil War all over again. And that's facts, because we see it in the news and we see what happens. Don't tell me that. And what I always hear the same thing from white liberals. Every time I'm at a rally or I'm at some event, people are like, well, where are all the black folks? Where are all the black people at that support Corey Long? Where are all these black people? Where are all these Black Lives Matter members that you're talking about? Where are all these black folks, these people of color that are supposed to be standing up for equal rights like you are? And we're tired. You know, we work hard. We work night shifts. You know, we sweep the floors for white people. We make the beds for white people. We do the sports that entertain white people. We fight the wars that keep white people safe. People of color are busy. People of color are overworked. People of color are undervalued. And we're scared. When Gregory Vaughn Hill can't listen to music in his own garage, in the safety of his home, without getting shot in the face through a garage door, then we have a problem in America. And when that legal system awards his family the sum of $4, we have a serious problem in the legal justice system in America. And let me tell you, let me give you all a wake up call. All you white liberals that tune into MSNBC and watch Rachel Maddow and wait for that latest Mueller report to show up. Trump's going to get away with this. He's going to get away with this scot-free, and he's going to use the legal system of the United States of America to do it. He's already got Dershowitz writing the freaking book on all of this. I understand. And Jeff can say, well, 94.7 and all these people don't have any affiliation to what David is saying. But I'm going to say it right now. Everybody, all you liberals that are waiting for Trump to get locked up, it's not going to happen, because he's going to use this racist, white supremacist legal justice system of America to get away with it. The same justice system that props up these power structures and makes them and keeps them able to circumvent legal culpability. We see it all the time. We saw it with Enron. We saw it with Wall Street. Too big to fail, they say. Can't mess with it. It'll mess up the system too much. Look, it can't be just 15 people, y'all. And you can't keep asking black people to do the emotional labor to fight our own assailants. It's got to be more people. And you can't just elect Nakia Walker and be like, okay, we're done. No more Nazis are going to be here anymore. It's got to be more. Do better, Charlottesville. Do better. And from one metaphorical war, I segue to a literal one. This is Art Beltran.
Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning, Frank.
First of all, I want to apologize for things that I have to say in defense of people in Charlottesville that I feel that need to be defended. I feel that you are one of people that can understand the sentiment and the current climate that's going on here in our community.
I had been a newspaper reporter, so I understand where you're coming from.
So. Exactly. Yeah. So you're here to talk about the Vietnam Graffiti Project, the talk and exhibit that you're having at the Jefferson Madison Regional Library at the Northside Branch of June 13th.
Right.
Which is probably why I said June 13th. That's my excuse. That's my excuse. But let's talk about you and let people of Charlottesville know who you are. You're a lifetime journalist, like you said.
Well, I've been in the military history field for most of my life, but my early beginnings was in journalism.
Okay.
Up in New York, Long Island, and with Newsday, which was a big, you know, daily newspaper on Long Island. And I was lucky enough to land a job there, working through as a copy clerk and getting obits to write as a trial, and then making it as a reporter. So I did that for about 7 or 8 years.
Right on.
And so I've had the ability to, you know, sense a news story or something that is newsworthy. And I think that's part of why this whole Vietnam Graffiti Project started. Because with a background in military artifacts that I've had, I served in the Marines from 1963 to 69.
Oh, wow.
I didn't go to Vietnam, but I was in the Marine Corps Reserve up on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And
it wasn't like it was a cakewalk in between Korea and Vietnam either.
No.
I'm sure there were a few skirmishes that you had to...
Well, actually, I got married to my wife Lee in 1965. And if you were going out of the country, Vietnam was just starting to heat up then.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were leaving the country for a week or 2 weeks of vacation, in our case it was a honeymoon to St. Thomas and then Puerto Rico, you had to tell the Marine Corps, the Sergeant Major, where you were going. And just in case they needed to call you back. So I told the Sergeant Major, and he said, Beltran, pack your sea bag, because when you come back after these 2 weeks, we expect to be going to Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
So that's how we spent our honeymoon, thinking about where I was going.
And beautiful time. Beautiful time.
But it didn't happen.
Oh, good.
So I didn't have to go to Vietnam.
Cool.
But I was working, I was asked to work on the film The Thin Red Line by the production designer, Jack Fisk, who lives in the community.
Oh, wow.
He's married to Sissy Spacek, and Jack was doing the production design work, you know, where the set would be, you know, how the set would be set up.
Mm-hmm.
He had to, he asked me to help him with the weapons, the equipment, and the uniforms for the film, just to make sure everything was correct for the World War II period. I had done
Thin Red Line. That's a hell of a film.
It's a great film.
It's amazing sometimes how small the artistic world is. Like Thin Red, I had no idea Thin Red Line that it was Jack Fisk who was producing it, and that leads right to you. You know, this huge film.
Exactly. And I was, you know, we were neighbors, and you know, kind of over the fence.
Of course.
Would you help? Because you knew.
Hey, I'm doing this huge blockbuster movie. I'm just wondering if you got an hour or two.
But anyway,
let me look some things over.
I was finished with all my work. He had to create the set of a troop compartment, and he found a ship in the Ghost Fleet of Virginia in the James River. At that time, there were 130 ships all lined up in the river. These were merchant ships, not U.S. Navy warships. One of them was a straight troop transport. It could carry 5,000 troops. It was built in World War II, served in World War II, served in Korea, and served in Vietnam. And after its Vietnam service, they parked it in the Ghost Fleet and just left it. But it was a time capsule. Everything that was on it from Vietnam stayed on it, because they were keeping it in a state of ready reserve. If a Hurricane Katrina happened, they could move it offshore. 3,000-5,000 people could live on it for an extended period of time.
Interesting.
So he got permission to go, called me up, and said, would you like to see a ship and help me carry gear? I need to film things. So I said, sure. And we went on the ship and was led into a troop compartment. First thing we saw, I saw, was all this graffiti on the underside of the bunk racks. These are the canvas inserts that are attached to a rectangular metal frame. And it had all kinds of inscriptions, artwork.
Yeah, when you look at it, it looks like a tilted cart, like a tilted cot, rather.
Yeah.
Take a look at this one.
That's crazy.
Charlie Brown.
Incredibly racist, but yes. It's definitely like a sign of the times, you know what I'm saying? It's preserved in that frame of mindset that this is the enemy and that's what we should be focused on. And Peanuts being like one of the like most popular comics books of that time, if not.
And this canvas will be at the library, by the way, so folks can see it, and other canvases as well, that will give them kind of an idea of what it was like during that period.
Right on.
And, you know, it's interesting what you, the beginning of what you said. You know, in the military, it's a life and death situation. You know, in training on Long Island, there were African Americans along with whites. And going on the ship, we found canvases that were definitely written on by African Americans.
Right.
But, and the neat thing about this whole project, because they put a name and a hometown where they were from and maybe a drawing, maybe a saying. We can find them. My wife, Lee, uses the telephone internet directory. Yeah. And we track them down because we're interested in knowing. These are young kids.
These are
18, 19-year-olds for the most part. And what we want to know is, what was it like to be on that ship? Because it took 18 to 21 days to get there.
Right.
Most people flew to Vietnam, and it was 18 hours. But on the ship, you had a lot to think about.
Right.
And so we find them, and we do an interview about what was it like for you to be 18 or 19?
Mm-hmm.
How did you handle that time, all that time that you spent on the ship?
Right.
And so that's where we have conducted probably over 100 interviews of that, the mindset, what was going on, both African Americans and white troops. And it became a mission to try and document as much of that as possible. And the good news is all of those interviews and all of that we've done, the Library of Congress wants to preserve.
Oh, wow.
Up in Washington. So this whole story will be saved for the American public for generations to come.
And that's exactly how it should be. It's like, you know, these are stories that should be kept.
We only have like about a minute or so, but I definitely, if you can give me a short, like 60-second, like differentiation between journalism and military history, and we'll talk about that more in after the break. But I just want to get, like, you know, what you think about that.
Well, journalism, you know, at least you're able to meet the people that you're going to interview right there.
And we'll keep it at that. We'll go for it. Yeah, that's a great way to keep it at. Yeah, dead men tell no tales. Absolutely. Only their cops do. This is Homegrown. Drop!
Hi, I'm Jesse Conover.
And I'm Marjorie Ruderman.
We're with Feminine Hijinks, local improv group from Big Blue Door.
And this is Homegrown, your show about local art.
On 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
17 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Clinton. We are talking with Art Beltrone of the Vietnam Graffiti Project. He's doing a talk and exhibit at Jefferson Madison Regional Library, Northside Branch, on June 13th. And
Northside.
But yeah, I got to get into this because we were already doing it during the break. We got to talk about everything in this case, right? Yeah. So you said everything was a time capsule. This actually looks like a book that my dad had on his like counter or in his bookshelf when he was a kid and I was in his grandmother's house. But yeah, all this stuff. Like I was saying, I've never seen a Butterfinger rapper that old. And yeah, the story behind this magic marker.
Okay, well, on the ship, besides the canvases with the graffiti, when we visited it, visited it numerous times, and at one time we saw the corner of a newspaper sticking out from a sheet, and pulled it out, and it turned out to be a copy of the Walker Report. The ship was the General Nelson Walker, and the paper was published on the ship. Walker was a World War II veteran who was killed a few days into the Normandy invasion.
Interesting.
So they named the ship after him. So that said, with that found, we thought, what else is in the sheets? So we started looking, and we found everything from Butterfinger wrappers to Camel cigarette packages, Planters peanuts wrappers, flip-flops that had been left behind.
Because you know it's hot on that sub. And you gotta let your feet breathe. You can't be coming with all boots and funky feet. 10,000 funky feet, rather,
on
a ship.
And a Marks-A-Lot magic marker.
Mm-hmm.
And the magic markers were prevalent during the Vietnam era because we had to, and I was in the Marine Corps during that period, we had to put our service number in our clothing so that wouldn't get mixed up. So you used a magic marker to put your number on. And so there were magic markers on the ship, and they used the magic markers to create the graffiti on the canvases.
Cool.
And so that's how, and we found several of the magic markers that were long dried up, but they were still there. Mm-hmm. So they became an artifact that told the story of how the graffiti was created.
So what do you see in these graffitis? What are the things that the servicemen did?
We're not scholars when it comes to graffiti, but we have had to talk to scholars. The graffiti is the most honest representation of what that person felt at that moment in time. Whatever he wrote on that canvas, if it was the name of a girlfriend, he was thinking of that girlfriend.
Right.
If it was a derogatory term against the military, the army, because he was drafted and didn't want to go, that's how he felt.
Right.
There's no, you know, arguing that that's not the way he felt.
Yeah, and I think I need to make a kind of like a clarification, because I think, especially for young people, when we talk about graffiti now, they think it's just like tagging and just like names and like bubbles and mostly artwork. But this was like actual, like literal representation of the mindset of the person who was either writing or, you know, or drawing. Because it wasn't like, you know, just like Sam was here or something. It was like an actual, like, it was like Facebook. It was like Facebook, like wall post, like a literal wall post for like that time and that place and that day.
That's so right. You hit it right on the nose. And I would encourage the young people, the young people to come out on Wednesday the 13th to see this, because they see the type of graffiti that you're talking about, you know, on the bridges and buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is something I remember growing up, and you would do that in your notebook. I don't know if you all did it in your notebook, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that is very relevant and important to the history of our country. And we didn't find any racial stuff on this. And that was the interesting thing. And you know
besides
why?
Besides the Chinese guys?
whether it was black or white, it didn't matter. You know why? Because when they were going to war, when they were going to Vietnam, your life depended on your buddy.
Yeah.
You trained with him. And whether he was black, white, Hispanic, Indian, it didn't matter. You relied on him, and there was none of that happened on the ship. In Vietnam, there was some of it because other things started to happen.
Yeah.
But in training, you know, this is a dangerous thing. When I was in the Marines, we lost three guys in a training exercise.
Jesus.
We hadn't even gotten to Vietnam.
Right.
We didn't go to Vietnam. This is in California.
I mean, like, you're always like preparing for
exactly,
the unexpected.
Exactly.
So I guess further along the lines of that, I mean, we see in this work, like, yeah, they had to play cards and they ate a lot of nuts and, you know, they read. And I thought I think that's interesting too, that they made the paper on the ship. Like, I think that says something about, like, kind of like the narrative that was kind of being, described. But what also, besides what you said, do you think it says about the mindset of what these kids are going through on that 3 week trip to wherever the hell they were going?
I'll give you another example. It's like 5,000 miles to go. So that's how far it is. We found a chaplain. During the exhibit in California, and we got to talking to the chaplain, and he had with him his calendar, his daily calendar book.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him something like that, or my wife Lee asked them, you know, how busy were you on the ship? You know, you're there to counsel the troops and offer them strength. And he said, well, look at my book. And he had all his voyages mapped out by day. And he said, here, we board the ship. We're on the first day, second day. And they're blank pages. There's nobody there.
Mm.
He said, so the voyages are like 18 to 21 days to get there. And so you get to about the 15th day. And he said, look what's happening. And suddenly there are like five entries in the book, appointments, you know, by hour.
Wow.
And then the next day there are 10. And the next day there are 20.
Wow.
So
people are starting to lose it.
At first, it's an adventure.
Yeah.
They're on the ship.
Yeah,
young
they're psyched.
They're young.
Ready to go.
You know, they're...
Yeah.
It's a boat ride. They're getting closer, though.
Wow.
And then when they get to just outside, they have transistor radios with them, and they stopped in Okinawa. The ship stopped in Okinawa. They were given about 8 hours to get off to go to the military base, R&R. A lot of them hopped the fence to go into this Naha, the city where the bars were. They got talking to people, and there were spies there who were able to radio back to Hanoi. And they would say, I'm with the 101st Airborne, or I'm with the 2nd Squadron of the 1st Cavalry.
Mm.
And the ship is 2 days away from Vietnam. Hanoi Hana gets on the radio that they're picking up on their transistor radios and saying, welcome, GIs, members of the 2nd Squadron, 1st Cavalry, to Vietnam. And they're saying, how did they know we were coming? So that's how it was on these voyages.
Wow.
A lot of times to think about things. And they came through and they served the country, black, white, all the, you know, people who were in the military at the time. So, and they never were thanked. And that's what this exhibit is about.
Mm.
It's about thanking all of them for their service, the thanks they never got before. And we're seeing it. This exhibit has traveled 11 years now all over the country to 60 venues. And we see how grandkids are bringing their grandfathers who went to Vietnam, and they see how somebody cares about what they did and how
right.
they served.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole purpose of this, and to preserve their history.
Right on. With that being said, do you feel like that Vietnam is the most misunderstood war?
I think so. I think it's most misunderstood and probably the most needless war.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they say the same thing, the veterans. You know, we keep on, you know, hearing that from them. We attend their reunions, and you know, the guys who were on the ship, and they, you know, but they're proud of their service because they did. They did serve, you know, whether they were drafted or joined, enlisted.
And also, I just want to ask you personally, like, what you've attained from this, and you're, like, it seems like your life's work has been kind of, like, documenting and archiving the work of these servicemen and women who have given their lives to protect and save America. Well, save. Well, I don't think we've ever needed saving, but you know, keeping us what we are.
Yeah.
So,
and I think let me respond to what your question was in a little bit of a broader sense.
Absolutely.
Because everybody here, everybody in this studio and out there listening, and you know, we have history all around us that we see every day, and maybe don't think that it's important. And so I think what I've come from out of this and from my earlier background training is the fact that history around us is seen, but let's try and save it if it needs to be saved. And so this was something that was on the ship for, you know, 30 years before we happened to get on it.
Mm-hmm.
The ship was scrapped. It was eliminated.
Yeah.
We went out to Texas, and that's where we got a lot of the material for the project. When they were in hazmat suits, and we're in blue jeans, and we're pulling canvases and other artifacts. But for the youngsters, just keep your eyes open and see what's around you. And history needs to be preserved. We learn from history, just what you were talking about early on. You know, that all of that needs to be saved. All of what happened has to be somehow documented and saved.
Absolutely. Yeah. June 13th, Art Beltran is going to be talking all about this. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks
thank
for
you
having
so
me.
Much.
Yeah. My wife will be there, too.
All right.
She's the brains behind this.
That's usually the case. But no, thank you. It's been fascinating. And I've never seen a Marxalot marker that old in my entire life. That's amazing.
Thanks for having me.
It probably still works. All right. We're going to do these artistic events. Let's do it. Here are just some of the artistic events happening this week. Currently running June 30th. Currently running till June 30th. An exaltation of locks. Paintings of birds from various artists at Chroma Projects. Now through June 30th as well. Trio! New paintings, drawings, and works on paper by Abby Kasonic. I'm sorry, Abby. I'm really sorry. See, you got to come on the show, and then I'll get your name right. Abby Kasonic. I'm so sorry, Abby. At New City Arts. Last Chance, The Taming of the Shrew by Shakespeare. That was my first Shakespeare show in high school. I was Petruchio. The last show at the American Shakespeare Center, spring season at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. Tomorrow, Jefferson Madison Regional Libraries. Summer kickoff celebration at Crozet Branch. Kids can pick up their summer reading challenge list. Oh, because that's the one thing I couldn't wait to do all summer long, was just read, and just not pay attention to my Nintendo. June 12th, the Fralin Art Museum offers Babies in Artland for adult caregivers of infants 18 months and younger. Don't be bringing your old-ass babies in here. It's only for infants. Bring your baby to join fellow parents for lively conversations about works of art. How does that work? Do they like ID kids when they like come in? It's like, sorry.
Oh yeah.
Too old. I see them legs dragging. You gotta get out. June 12th.
They do a persistence test.
You said triangle. Get out of here. June 12th, school's out block party at the Northside branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Snow cones, face paintings, balloon animals, and kids' summer reading challenge list. They're going to keep pushing that summer reading challenge list, aren't they? June 12th.
Every branch has its party.
Every branch has its party. June 12th. Car wash. Walking at the car wash. Yeah. Vinegar Hill Theater is part of Lighthouse Studios' Vinegar Hill 76 film series. June 13th. Summer reading ice cream social at the Gordon Avenue branch.
And if you don't know about Vinegar Hill 76, go to SeaVillePodcast.com. Listen to last week's episode. We talked to Chandler Farabee.
Chandler Farabee.
Just about it.
Yep. She was awesome. That was awesome. Y'all should check that out. I blanked out during that part of the interview, but I completely blamed that on my seething anger for injustice in Charlottesville. Summer reading Ice Cream Social at the Gordon Avenue branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library, featuring painting of faces, ice cream, and kids' summer reading. Challenge list.
You made it sound like they're painting the ice cream as well. They're painting the faces, and they're painting ice cream.
Painting it with jimmies and sprinkles and whatever. June 13th through June 16th, Dennis Lehane's Coronado at Guerrilla Theater. Six people walk into a bar for a story of true love, adultery, and murder. That's usually how it sounds like when I walk into a bar, besides the murder. At least not that one time. June 15th, local author Elizabeth Mead Howard talks about her recent book, Aging Famously, Follow Those You Admire to Living Long and Well, at the Northside branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. June 15th, local author Randall Klein and musical duo Bird and Mantis at New Dominion Bookshop. That sounds like an awesome musical duo, actually. June 16th, poet Sarah M. Robinson with the Charlottesville Writer House leads Not Just Any Walden Pond, a six-hour writer's retreat to focus on how nature can inspire our creativity. June 16th, playwright and director Ariel Stress, it's the context, leads Jumpstart Your Narrative at the Writer House for people looking to start a new play. I should go there. June 16th, UVA Fairland Art Museum docent and former guest June Hines. Oh, we love June Hines. She's adorable. Guides you through 45 minutes of meditative exploration of Fraylin art pieces at her Looking Inward Meditative Art Tour. June 16th, Charlottesville Swing Dance Society June Dance at the Municipal Arts Center. June 16th, Jefferson Madison Regional Library staff gather with literature lovers at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub to celebrate Bloomsday with their favorite James Joyce passage. June 16th as well, the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center holds its June 16th celebration with Nay and the Shell. Yes, I love Nay. The Mighty Joshua Acoustic Trio and Udders. And for your music options this week, today, we got Patrick and Aaron Owell at Friends and Albemarle Cider Works at 2:30. And also today, Callie Garrett with Gary Green at Glass. Yeah, that's a lot of G's. You got the Garrett with Gary and the Green at the Glasshouse Winery at 3. So that's today. Get your drink on. You can start with cider. You can move to wine. And then finish up with beer at 3 Notch. And then you'll be totally effed up by whatever. Tonight, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Tomorrow, Jupiter and the Stars at the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar. Featuring Yonder Phonics and Wayward Kid from Atlanta. Is that his name? Or is he just actually, he just really wants people to know that he's from Atlanta? I know Atlanta's dope, y'all, but everybody doesn't have to say, everybody that's Atlanta doesn't have to say they from Atlanta.
That's us. Because see, we're a local art show, so we always point out when we have visiting artists.
See, Atlanta's getting like Brooklyn. They always got to shout Atlanta all the time.
Brooklyn?
We get it. We know. June 14th, Sue Harlow at Stinson Vineyards. June 14th, Andrew Green, Michael Clem, Bayo, and Tom Marshall in the debut and finale of the Halo Brothers at the Glasshouse Winery. Oh, June 15th is jam-packed. Gary Randall at Wayland's Crossing Tavern. South Canal Street at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. Get your power pop on with the King of Mustang at Dirty Nelly. New Boss with James Badfellows and LaDaba at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. Got the Leg Warmers at the Jefferson Theater. Got Bob Inez at Fendellini's. That is all on June 15th. June 16th, that's another story. David Kulund and Maddie Metcalf at the Star Hill Brewery and Tap Room. You got Willie D.E. at Albemarle Cider Works. You got the Buzzard Hollow Boys at Knight's Vineyards. Yeah, and you got Go-Go Grand opening with Seductive Sounds, Go-Go Band. That's all June 16th. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, Seafoot. Charlottesville's Friends of Old Time Music. Weekly open jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitary Church. Also every Monday, Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar. And Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Umberto Sales at the Bebedero. Every Wednesday, Wacky Wednesday, y'all. Here in what's trying to be the new Charlottesville, but keeps turning into the old Charlottesville. Open mic night
Prairie Narda Farm Brewery. Bam! Open mic night at Ollie's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo.
Bam!
Jazz Collective number 9, Fellini's number 9.
Bam!
DG and friends at the Babadero.
Bam!
Watch out the Fusion at the X Art Park.
Bam!
Stone Rollin' at the Shebeen Pub in Bry.
Rollin'.
And the Microzensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And every Thursday it's Lou at the Babadero, and you know what it is. John Durth Quintet at Miller's, because every Thursday.
You just got to come down to Durth.
I know. He does it better than me. I can't take credit for his line. All right. That's what's going down in Seville. Make it better, y'all. We got to pay some bills. We'll be right back. This is Homegrown. Drop!
Hi, this is Charlie Pasterfield.
Susan Munson.
And Stuart Home from Mama Tried.
And you're listening to
Homegrown Radio on 94.7.
Oh my God, it is 37 minutes past the hour, and I'm totally not paying attention to what I'm doing. But this is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC. Don't look at me like that. The progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Clinton. We got some musical guests in the house, but stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call. Thank you, sir. We got Rick Moore as your host today. His guests are Lindsay Edison. Edison? I gave your name a lot more flair than it probably was. And Meredith Dickens.
That's when she's fancy. Edison.
Yeah. Lindsay Edison and Meredith Dickens from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Yo! Did y'all buy ad space? Like, this is insane. I feel like I should work for y'all after this. I'm still not paying them fines. I returned the books. Stop mailing me. Talking about their summer reading picks for the summer reading challenge list, most likely. But we have... Go ahead, Clinton.
They're serious about their reading challenge list.
They are so...
Everybody's got the reading challenge. Everybody.
Oh, man.
Get that reading challenge.
Yo. This is like American Ninja Warrior reading challenge right here. Jefferson Madison Regional Library is going for that gold, man. They're like, all these other libraries, we're going to beat them this year. We're going to beat him. I know there's a rally or something that goes on. All right, stop it. He's like, come on, I just want to play, dude. I just want to play. These guys. Right, you ever see two guys that automatically look like they can jam? Just like automatically look like they can shred at whatever they're playing. All right, this is Greg Ward and Gabe Gavin. Gavin? Yeah. Gabe Gavin? Yeah. Got my B's and my V's. But no, Daryl Rose, because I guess he's not cool. Is that Daryl Rose? Your thingy right there? Is that?
I can never compare.
You know, sometimes I give my equipment names. This is a Greg Ward project. This is the reggae show that's going down in Restoration Hall at Old Trail Crozet, June 15th. How's it going, y'all?
Good, great.
Good. Thank you for coming, first of all, and setting up and being super cool. So it looks like y'all just want to get into it. Y'all just want to play a track that you're all going to be playing June 15th. I feel like listening to this music because I just want to look at the equipment because that guitar looks bomb-ass. All right. This is a Greg Ward project. Without further ado, show him some love. Thank you.
comes from the rock. Before the Constitution, before the bow of dreadlock. When Jah created man, he created him free. All laws should reflect what is there naturally. The herb is the gift, the birthright from our Lord. The wheat of paradise shall paradise restore. Healing of the nation, cannabis I do reveal. The herb is my meat and my spiritual meal. Right time.
Y'all gonna sit down? Y'all gonna hang out? Y'all gonna talk turkey?
Come up to the mics. Come up to the mics.
y'all just born musicians. Like we don't know what to do when we're not playing instruments. We don't talk.
You play too?
Yeah. I play a little guitar. Not as much as I did before. Come, let's get y'all in here so I can get y'all nice and tight. Cool. So let's talk about it. I guess since Gabe, you got the mic first. We'll
kill some time. Talk about how you got mixed up with Greg in this crazy thing called the Greg Ward Project, and what your experience has been in it since.
Well, I met Greg when I first moved to Charlotte, so about 10 years ago.
Where'd you move from?
Hawaii.
And Couldn't have guessed it. Yeah, I mean, you're mad exotic, brother. And it's a beautiful thing. You're a beautiful man. So I just wanted to give you your props.
Oh, thanks. Same to you, by the way.
No problem. I thought we met just now. I guess that's okay. How I mean. No, I guess this is actually meeting. But yeah, no problem. But yeah, go on. Hawaii.
So yeah, I was seeking out reggae music, and a friend of mine turned me on to Greg Ward. And
shout out to Brent Finland.
Yeah, went and checked him out.
Brent Finland.
Hit the mic just up to you. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Talk across it.
So, as soon as I saw Greg, I was, I knew he was someone I wanted to work with. He was bringing roots music and conscious lyrics, and that's what drew me to reggae in the first place.
So, right on.
Yeah, I've been grateful for the connection.
Hell yeah. So, yeah, let's take it to you, Greg, and talk about, first of all, thank you both for coming and, spreading that love and spreading that funk.
Thank you.
You know, but talk about exactly when you got into reggae. When was the first, the first track
you started listening?
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Never mind. Nope, can't get into it. We got to pay some bills, y'all. We got to do a little drop. We're going to be right back, though. Greg Ward, Gabe Gavin, this is Homegrown. Drop.
Hi, this is Rachel Austin. I'm a songwriter, improviser, performer, voice teacher, etc. Actually, I'm going to do that again. Hi, this is Rachel Austin. No, not that Rachel Austin. I'm the local artist, and this is Homegrown, your show about local arts on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
All right, 47 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you are missing one hell of a Homegrown 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Clinton. We got the Greg Ward Project jamming in the house for the first time. Greg Ward, Gabe, Gavin, G squared. Nah, I'm going to call you that. That was awesome. busting out some dope reggae tunes. I was
talking to Gabe, and now we're going to bring it over to Greg about really what sparked your love for reggae, your want to play it predominantly.
Sure.
And, you know, meeting Gabe and creating the project, which is the Greg Ward Project.
Well, you know, we have many different bands, just to point out, so it's not always with my name. We got the Dubsetters, and we got Stable Roots is the first group I play with. I'll mention them in a moment.
Right on.
Positive Collective is a group that we play with, a seven-piece band.
Okay.
So, yeah, a lot of good reggae musicians in the area.
Dope.
But, yeah, you asked what turned me on to reggae music. I guess the answer is similar to what Gabe was seeking. You know, when I loved music from a young child, you know, I mean, from 14 years old, I was playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I reached into high school, started rebelling against, you know, I mean, authoritarian, you know, my ideas and what seemed to be hypocrisy in the system, but I still latched on to, you know, I mean,
high school definitely teaches you about authoritarianism.
This is true. So, yeah, so just, you know, but loving, like Gabe said, conscious vibes, you know what I mean? Like loving, growing up in the church and rebelling against the authority of churches telling you what is and what is not the gateway to, you know, supposed this and that, but rather seeing the consciousness that was involved in the, you know, the lead characters of Christ and of these major religions. And so when I saw Rastafari and saw people who was, you know what I mean, people who were both adhering to the ideals of Christianity in the sense of loving your neighbors and uplifting righteousness and truth and rights upon the earth, standing up for poor people, standing up for, you know what I mean, and not in a hypocritical way that the leadership, you know, in the governments that we see. So it really turned me on in that sense. And of course, I loved ganja growing up, you know what I mean, in high school, I got turned on to that, and to see that the Rastas were saying, hey, this is a God-given plant that's beneficial, again, against the typical worldview of it being negative based upon false presumptions and money. But yeah, purely money involved. Yeah. So, yeah.
So I gotta ask, because I've been here for years. I've been here for decades, but moved here from the north. And so it probably strikes me more than it does people who grew up and came from around here. But this is so much a bluegrass and old time area. What is it like to do reggae here? What does that mean to do reggae, like, in Central Virginia?
Sure. I'll let Gabe answer.
Well, I would just say, from my perspective, it's, I mean, it's all roots music, and you can hear some similar rhythmic qualities in bluegrass to what you can hear in reggae. And I remember someone, I don't remember who it was, but someone said, like a famous musician said, like, all music is folk music. Because it's all being played by folk.
Mm-hmm. Good answer. Yeah, I have to agree with Gabe. You know, I mean, all the rhetoric and different things in regards to, you know, I mean, philosophies and whatnot, I think what it comes down to for us is love of people, you know what I mean? And we always appreciate seeing festivals and street gatherings because we love to see people getting along. Mm-hmm. And music as a whole, people get along and they enjoy gathering together and they forget their woes and they forget their, you know, I mean, difficulties.
Yeah. I want to ask a question, and this just came to mind, and I want y'all to do another song, so I won't make it too long. I've just been kind of bugging on this whole, like, this is going to sound like completely off kilter, but it's going to come around. I'm totally tripping still off this Kanye West situation and how he said, like, slavery is a choice. And I'm all at the point, like, I'm like, F Kanye, I can't deal with him. But he'll still come out with music, like, to this day, that I'm like, I vibe with. So I guess I'm asking you, do you feel like music has to be political? And the people that create music have to stand by a certain principle in order for it to be completely enjoyed? Because now I can't enjoy Kanye anymore because I kind of know what he's about. And it's kind of like counter to what he is supposed to be speaking out for. So I guess I'm asking you, like, do you feel that there is a responsibility to be political in music and not just enjoy it? Because I think it's always a responsibility for black people.
Sure. I think that it's a responsibility to be yourself. You know, I mean, politics is again man-made things that people get divisive about. But if you stand up for people taking care of one another, that's beyond politics, right? So you don't have to speak about politics as a specific.
I hear that.
In order for politics to be affected, you can get people woken up to taking care of one another, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the politicians either are going to look good in the light of mm-hmm. positivity, or they're not going to look good.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But as far as what you said regarding people and whether they're walking the walk of the talk that they speak about in mm-hmm. their music, you know, we're all human, and I mean, what you're saying is correct. I think we got to do our best to walk the walk. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, if we want to have power in the things that we do, whether it be singing or whatnot, but.
I feel like the more integrity you maintain with the music, the more powerful it is, and so. You can hear music that's very commercial and it's, you know, highly produced, but the message to me, it doesn't hit because you can feel the shallowness.
And it can be well produced. It can have all the right EQ in the mix and have all the instruments in the world.
But what's the heart behind it? What's the message?
Totally.
Yeah. So
and
that's why I love working with Greg.
Yeah. And it seems like y'all like working with each other, and that's great. So with that being said, can we hear one more?
Sure.
I mean, y'all got the equipment up. So let's do it. I'm gonna let y'all set up. Yeah, and while that, all right, we got 4 minutes to do this.
Thanks.
Yeah, y'all set it up. This is gonna be the Greg Ward Project. They're gonna be at the Restoration Hall in Old Trail Crozet on June 15th, and they're gonna do one more song to lead us out. Cause I ain't got nothing more to say after this. You got any more to say? No, I'm just gonna, you know,
just that we've done a really big range in the show, going from.
Folk
art to folk music, from war that's dividing people to art that's, you know, that's uniting people.
Beautiful.
This is kind of what Charlottesville is all about, and we need to celebrate diversity, and understand the importance of it. This has been Homegrown. We'll be here next week, but for now, this is the Greg Ward Project, and we're checking out. Do it.
All right. Big up Charlottesville. Big up David and Clinton and everyone that's out here today.
Homegrown!
It's another original called Never Knew. Across the earth, a word, sound, and the power. This is Thank you, guys.
Thank you. This has been Homegrown. Hey, this has been Homegrown, your show dedicated to local art. We'd like to thank our guest, Art Beltrone, from the Vietnam Graffiti Project. Of course, Greg Ward and Greg Kim Gavin. Check out their reggae show, Restoration Hall, at Old Trail Crozet, June 15th. Stay tuned. Coming up next is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Rick Moore talking to Meredith Dickens, Lindsay Idison, from Jefferson Madison Regional Library. We'll be with you next week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in.